this talk. So I would like first to thank the organizers to give me this opportunity to present some of our work. The title of my talk is The Strong and the Local Pairing in Ion-Based Superconductors, as seen by photoelectrons. And the outline is, I divided this talk into four parts. The first is a brief review of our RPAS measurement on the superconducting gap in many ion-based superconductors. Then I will talk two recent work. One is the observation of the strong pairing on the bands without Fermi surface in this cobalt-doped lithium-ion arsenic. Then I will follow up with an even newer result. It's the observation of the Fermi liquid to non-Fermi liquid crossover in the same material due to the low energy spin fluctuation at the Fermi surface nesting. And then finally, I will conclude my talk by mentioning this our early phenomenological understanding of the ion-based superconductor and possibly the implication to the cuprates. So since this talk involves the review part, so I have a large number of co-workers, collaborators, and many RPAS people, and the recent work on this non-Fermi liquid behavior involved both optical group from Holmes, from Brookhaven, and also NMR group from Renmin University. We have support from some theorists, and also we got a sample from many groups. And the first brief review, and this is our first result back 6 years ago. We observed a nodeless Fermi surface dependent superconducting gap in this optimal hole doped bearing iron 2 arsenic 2. TC is 37. So since this is a 5-band material, we can observe the superconducting gap on each of this band, and the surprising thing is while the superconducting gap is isotropic along one particular Fermi surface, the magnitude of the gap can change dramatically from one Fermi surface from the inner hole to the outer hole by as much as 50%. So at the inner hole, the gap is quite large, 12 mEV, and the outer hole is 6 mEV. And then if we look at the zone corner at the electron Fermi surface, the gap is also large with a similar value for the inner hole Fermi surface. This is quite similar to what is proposed, the so-called Fermionology-driven scenario or Fermi surface nesting scenario, which if you have this two nest Fermi surface, then this the couple pair where couple pair will hop between these two Fermi surface and get enhanced, so you have a large gap on the nested Fermi surface. Then another scenario also proposed around the similar time is this so-called J1, J2 model, which essentially says where the pairing is controlled by this phenomenological local moment, which produce this magnetic order in the parent phase, and also introduce the parent for the material. Of course, the leading term for the J1, J2, if the J2 is larger than half J1, and also become also is antiferromagnetic, the leading term for the gap function is the well-known cosine kx times cosine ky. That was first suggested by a various group, including Jiangping Hu, and who proposed to us and to urge us to write a second paper to actually compare to this function. You can see more or less all of gap sims can be compared to this. And notice the ratio of the two data over TC is quite large, 7 or 8. Then in order to contrast, to distinguish these two approach, we went on to study many ion-based superconductors. So first we studied different regime of the 1-2-2, from optimum dope to underdope to overdope, eventually to electron dope. All we see the gap on the different Fermi surface seems can be more or less described by cosine kx, cosine ky. And then we also look at this kz dependence. Before cosine kx, cosine ky is the implant. We can change the photo energy, and that means we actually change kz. Then we can see this the oscillation of the gap. The oscillation is not large, from 9 mEV to 12 mEV for the for one inner whole Fermi surface. And this variation can be actually fed by this cosine kz term. And this term is actually is smaller. And the ratio of this two gap term, one is the in plane, another is out of plane, is roughly about 0.17, similar to the JC over JAB. Interesting, we found all of the gap on the 5 Fermi surface can be fit with a single function. One is this cosine kx, cosine ky, plus a cosine kz term, which have the coefficient which is related to cosine kx, cosine ky. So if you think about this, there also is two cosine together. And after the 1-2-2, we move to the different material because people challenge us, say the 1-2-2, you have this surface not perfectly non-polar. And so we move to some material which have a very good non-polar surface. And so one example is lithium-ion arsenic. Due to this, the bonding between the two lithium layer is a very weak, one vast type. And we see a very sharp peak with like 5 mEV or less. So we can accurately trace the gap for different Fermi surface. And then we plot here, and we also compare to the function. They have some problems, especially for the electron side. We have some ideas, but we haven't fully understand. But for the whole Fermi surface, especially for this large whole Fermi surface, we found that it follow quite well with the cosine kx times cosine ky. A similar result has been observed by Shem's group beautifully by STM using the interference pattern and to derive this oscillation of this out a large whole Fermi surface. They also see this the variation. And if we put our result, the RPAS result, which has a larger error bar than STM, and we see a good agreement between RPAS and STM. So RPAS are the blue dots, STM are this red dots. For both this large hole, this beta band, the large hole, and this smaller inner hole, same agreement, quite nice, and especially for this the variation. And the green line is actually the simple cosine ks, cosine ky. So at least from this, we can conclude the cosine ks, cosine ky describe well for both STM and RPAS result on this material, especially on this large hole, because this large square-like hole will have a different value for the cosine ks, cosine ky. And a second example for the nonpolar surface is a 1-1 material. And although TC for this one is a little bit low, like 13 K, we can see, again, very sharp coherent peak below TC and become rapidly broad at TC. And we can trace the gap very nicely for different Fermi surface. But if we plot the gap versus this simple cosine case, cosine ky, seems it cannot fit because they have this tiny hole and the electron, and this whole Fermi surface have a smaller gap. What's the problem? The problem we actually anticipate even before we do this is we use both axes. Why? Yeah, we define the, this is kx, this is ky. You can rotate by 90 degree. It's the same. So, therefore, for the symmetry. Okay, is that right? So we since we know for this 1-1 system, the magnetic order is so-called this bicollinear. So the explanation is have to involve this J3, and the J3, if you put the J3 into a gap function, then it will introduce another S wave called cosine 2kx plus cosine 2ky. If you put this function and then to do it, then you can get a nice fit for our RPAS result. Similarly, we get the idea for another this so-called 1-2-2 selenite, but more significantly is for this potassium ion to selenium to there is no whole Fermi surface at the gamma point. So in fact, this more or less significantly weakened the Fermi knowledge driven pairing scenario, if not killed. And because you don't have a whole Fermi surface to nest with the electron. Of course, people will say, well, you still have electron, electron Fermi surface, which can be more or less nested or scattered, the pair scattering. But for that, for the same kind of Fermi surface, the pair scattering is not good because you have a limited phase space. You need a hole and the electron to gain the phase space to enhance the spin sensibility. So in this case, the enhancement of the spin sensibility is much weaker for the same type of Fermi surface. And for this electron Fermi surface, we see a fairly isotropic gap, and which rewards the simple D wave type. But of course, people say, well, you have two electron Fermi surface because the band folding, because you have the arsenic up and down, and which you cannot rod completely. But fortunately, they have a tiny 3D Fermi surface at the Z point, okay, the gamma point, but at the KZ equal to pi. And we measure the gap around this, and also it's fairly isotropic. So it's very difficult to imagine that you have a simple D wave for this material. So this is a review, and the next will be two new results. The first one is this lithium ion arsenate. This system turned out to be quite unique. So first of all, the parent compound is a superconductor without a magnetic order. It has a highest TC, with the doping TC decrease. So we look at this evolution, and immediately we realize the Fermi logic is actually different from other material, especially if we compare to the other 111, say the sodium ion arsenic. For usual one, the parent compound are compensate material. So you have a hole and the electron, both are small, and they compensate. But for this, although they compensate, but both electron Fermi surface and the hole Fermi surface are fairly large, okay? And it become such a way, and they have no good nesting. I will show you later. Especially they have this tiny hole Fermi surface, which are those DXZ and DYZ orbital. With some cobalt, okay, here is a 3%. This tiny hole pocket will sink below Fermi energy. So we will look at what's the pairing, okay, for this tiny hole pocket. And here is this pure one, okay. We see this small hole Fermi surface just barely cross, okay. With 1% is start already below, 3% even lower. And then we measure the normal state, superconducting state, and extract the gap. So for this parent compound, the gap is easy to extract because, well, at the Fermi surface, we have this epsilon k equal to zero, so Ek is directly from the gap, so we can essentially read out. That's why sometimes we do this reflection. We read out this two-peak separation, which is two data, but you can also fit with this because the peak widths are very well-defined. However, if we dope it, then this the band started to sink in below. So if we know the normal state, what's the epsilon k at the top of the band, we can still derive the gap by doing the fit. You can see the normal state and the superconducting state has the difference. That's due to the gap opening at 1%, at 3%. So we can extract the gap. The gap value is become slightly smaller, but not much. So here again, it's the summary of this, and we see this the clear difference between the superconductor state and the normal state. This difference is due to this Bogoliubov relationship, and we can nicely fit it and extract the gap. So that's the two way we extract the gap, and we have a high resolution. The peak is well defined, so the result is reliable. So we extract this, we found the pairing is more or less a constant through the COBOL. Then, although the Fermi surface actually sinking below EF, so we expect if it's due to the driven for the Fermi surface, then the pairing should vanish rapidly. But people will argue, well, you're for other Fermi surface, maybe due to proximity effect, you gain the pairing strength for this sinking whole pocket. However, we found that the pairing actually is the largest at the zone center, at this whole pocket. And the pairing become much smaller at the other Fermi surface. So it's highly unlikely this pairing is due to proximity effect. And in fact, if you think about it, it's actually consistent with the cosine kx, cosine ky, because you have the both kx, ky equal to zero, you have the maximum pairing for this point. The final result is the observation of the Fermi liquid to non-Fermi liquid crossover, which we think will somehow rule out, where I cannot say rule out, where somehow inconsistent with the low energy or zero energy spin fluctuation at the Fermi surface nesting. So again, this is a system we study lithium ion arsenic doped with the cobalt. This time we push the cobalt from zero and all the way to 40%. That's a very wide range. And we see the Fermi surface evolution is more or less consistent with the rigid band. So with the cobalt, you add the electron to the system, then the whole Fermi surface becomes smaller, and the electron Fermi surface become larger. Okay, then you shift by pi zero to see how good is the overlap of the Fermi surface. Then you see where either the x equal to zero, the overlap are not good. So this electron, this is a hole. With the increase of the cobalt, you see it become better and become very nice at 12%. Then if you go over, then of course they divide again, and eventually at 40%, the hole become so small and actually sitting inside of the electron Fermi surface. And we can define a quantity called the overlap factor or the nesting value. That's actually easy to define. And then this is nesting factor. We also measured NMR, and we see for the x equal to zero NMR, it's quite flat to the low temperature. But for the 12%, this NMR started to have the strong upturn at the low temperature, indicated a strong low energy spin fluctuation. We can also plot those value, 1 over T, T1T here, and we can see these two curves agree with each other. So since the nesting factor improve, then the low energy fluctuation improve. And we also look at this resistivity, both this DC resistivity, the transport. We feed this, and for the parent compound, it's a T square, and then become this 1.3, the power decrease, and then with a further increase, the power increase, and at 40%, it back to the T squared, the Fermi liquid behavior. So we have this power from 2 go down to 1.3 going back. For the optical resistivity, they behave the same. This is the lifetime, the 1 over lifetime. You have this T squared decrease 1.6, 1.3 back to square. So the both DC and AC lifetime behave the same. So we summarize the result into this phase type. Again, I repeat, so this system, lithium ion arsenide, is a unique system. The parent compound is has the highest TC without magnetic order. With the cobalt, the TC decrease, and we see this the Fermi surface nesting, non-nesting become nested, and then back to non-nesting, and 1 over T1T, which represent the low energy spin fluctuation, has a peak exactly at the nesting scenario. And we see they have this Fermi liquid to non-Fermi liquid to Fermi liquid again. This phase time is also strange. Usually, in both cuprates, nictites, even heavy fermion superconductor, usually the non-Fermi liquid seems to sit at the optimum TC for many systems. But this one is seems to sit at the boundary, at the end of the superconductivity door. So we think the nesting control the low energy spin fluctuation, which does not enhance superconductivity. And since my time running out, I will just flash the last few slides, talking up some of our phenomenological understanding of the ion-based superconductor, which have some similarity with Dong Hai's talk, at least a part of it. And this is the phase diagram for the four different unconventional superconductor. They all close to the antiferromagnetic state. And we at least classified the cuprates and the nictites into these three groups according to their local exchange force. The cuprates is this antiferromagnetic J1 term is the largest one. And this has this the J2 for this iron nictites. Iron selenide or telluride have both J2 and J3. So those have actually controlled the magnetic order the pattern from this checkerboard to this collinear and this bicollinear term. And also, if we use a simple this TJ mean field equation, and in order to gain the largest TC, one have to increase the so-called overlap strength between the parent form factor and the Fermi surface, then one can evaluate the possible term. Then for cuprates, then D wave, of course, compared to S wave, the overlap is much larger. Again, for the nictites, you can see you have this cosine case, cosine ky, which is much larger. For this for the D wave comparison. That's easy to understand from this picture. For cuprates, you want the D wave, which maximize the gap for the large sector of the Fermi surface, especially for this the flat band. And for nictites, you also maximize the pairing for those small pocket. That's also well agree with our best measurement. And also we see from Riggs that you have this persistent this spin fluctuation up to this whole doping, and finally this is a summary. So I will leave the summary here, and thank you.
Talk. Who has questions? Oh, Peng-Cheng is here.
So you know, for NMR measurement, I mean, there's a sort of a structural form factor type of thing, right?
In order
one over TT1, and
yes,
we know the spin fluctuation in the undoped stuff is transversely incommensurate.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, who knows, you know, what it will be in the you know, 12% above. I mean, is it fair to simply using this one over TT1, you know, to actually
complain,
to say the strength of the magnetic fluctuation?
We're looking into this issue. Of course, we know in cuprates they have the form factor which enhance certain K regime of this toward this 1/T1T. But for the nictites, it has a 5 band. So from the calculation, it's more or less this momentum average. So it control. This 1/T1T come from the most part of Fermi surface, and so that there's no particular selection or strong preference, so that's no problem at all.
So maybe I missed this, but what about just the night shift?
Well, I haven't shown the night shift. If I remember correctly, the night shift will going down and stay saturated.
So no particular feature at that critical doping?
Yeah, it's fairly flat.
This is just a comment. You mentioned whether the weak coupling theory is valid or not. And according to theories like spin fluctuation, flex, like fluctuation exchange, where we take into account the self-energy effect, in that case, we can actually get a result where the nesting and the TC is anti-correlated. So it's depends on how you use the weak coupling theory, I believe.
Okay. Where?
Can you say something about the M star? I mean, of the different bands. You focused only on the superconducting state. And
yeah.
Now, presumably, you know,
yes,
evolved as a function of X. Is there any X dependence to the effective masses?
Well, yes, they do, and especially if we dope, we study a lot this. I haven't presented here. So we replace iron by say cobalt and completely cobalt, completely manganese and the chromine and the copper, and then we see. It's sensitive to, it's somewhat sensitive toward the feeding factor. And we noticed at this pure potassium iron 2 arsenic 2, when you heavily hold up, so it actually become more correlated. That's controlled by the feeding factor. But of course, they also have some controlled by the hybridization. So if you put the phosphide, then they have the bonding between the iron arsenic and the bonding between iron phosphide become different. So they have a stronger hybridization. So they have a many factor to affect. And of course, if you look at the different system, then they have the variation. The 1-1 become the flattest band, the most correlated. And also we noticed that this DXY seems renormalized the most. That's probably why it undergoes this coherence to incoherence crossover, as you proposed. We also believe that's the case. We don't believe it's a mod transition. For the reason, since the DXY is also very sensitive to the impurity, so you can control it by impurity. So the flat band, of course, tend to become more incoherent at high temperature and more impurity. So.
If you replace iron by cobalt in the LiFAS, I would expect a very strong effect from impurity scattering also. I mean, I'm surprised that you find T-square behavior on one end and on the other end of the doping range in the middle linear, but I mean, your residual resistivity increases more or less continuously with
yes.
the cobalt yeah. doping. How would you estimate the effect of the cobalt, I mean.
Yeah, as you observed, this rho zero increase continuously. We first thought that the one possibility for the non-Fermi liquid is due to impurity. So essentially, this coming back seems to rule out this possibility. So that's why we push before they stop here, the sample grows. So we say, gee, we need to see further if they can will come back to the Fermi liquid or not. Well, apparently the data suggests from both DC and AC. Resistivity suggests that. The reason where it turned out the cobalt scattering may not be so strong because we know the cobalt does not suppress TC effectively. And that's known for this. The suppress, of course, it's known for 1-2-2. You add a cobalt, you actually have you introduce the storm which is superconducting. So
yeah, but in the 1-2-2, in the 1-2-2 you suppress. You have only 20% doping, and then at 20% doping, the disease basically also gone.
Yeah,
I mean it's different. I agree. It's not,
sure.
It's not exactly the same as here.
Yeah.
But
here again, you. Here, TC is gone too. So it's not a cobalt is not so so effectively in destroying the superconductivity, which most people believe have a sign change.
I'm just alluding to your relatively strong statement that spin fluctuations are probably not influential. I'm just thinking, well. Could it be the cobalt doping which just suppresses TC? I mean, the impurity scattering from the cobalt, that's what I'm...
Well, as I said, in other systems, the suppression is not high heavily,
yeah.
Yes. So, and that it's the same 12%, 14% suppression, so.
Other questions? I have a question. So if you were to maintain the cosine kx, cosine ky gap structure, when you dope to on the order of 15-20%, you would expect the angle dependence of the gap as you go around the electron pockets, which have now become very large, to be much greater. So can you see that effect?
It, even without the this one. Yes. Even without it, you see that. It seems It's really dependent
on... Sorry, this is the stoichiometric material. I'm talking about the strongly doped material.
The same thing. Like, this anisotropy or the deviation from this simple cosine case, cosine ky, for the electron Fermi surface depend on how elliptical it controlled. If it's a circle, seems fine. If it's elliptical, more elliptical, it becomes along this direction, they suppress the gap.
If you were to continue to dope, you'd eventually get nodes. But you've never seen
them. No one sees a node.
Well, no many people see nodes, but not,
many people see the node for
in this electron pocket in the system.
For electron pocket, not outside. I know.
Not in ARPIS. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Other questions. Okay.
Who's ARPIS?
No. Sorry, I said not in ARPIS.
Other experiments, claim
nodes. Okay.
Where?
Anybody else?
Yeah, we see the node actually from emerging of the whole pocket from here.
Okay, if there are no further questions, let's thank Hongdi.